The week Prince died, I was flying to Charlotte, North Carolina, to speak to a group of Methodists. That same week, the state legislature of North Carolina voted in the so-called bathroom bill, which stated that people must use the bathroom that corresponds to the gender on their driver's license. As I stuffed my carry-on bag beneath the seat in front of me, I thought of this hideous bill and the little plan I had concocted to protest it. My bag contained a roll of scotch tape and half a dozen sheets of paper, all of which bore, in huge purple print, the androgynous symbol for Prince's name. The plane took off and I looked out the window. We were traveling over the dry plains of eastern Colorado, 30,000 feet above a dot matrix of green and brown circles that revealed the geometry of industrial agriculture. As a city girl who doesn't know a thing about farming, I've always found those green circles puzzling. Why would farmers plant circles of crops in lots that are square? When I looked into it later, I discovered that in 1940, just 29 miles from the spot where my plane made its way into the crisp Colorado sky, a man named Frank Zeebock invented the center pivot irrigation system, essentially revolutionizing farming in America. In his system, the watering equipment turns on a pivot, allowing sprinklers to water crops in a circular pattern. The crops aren't planted in circles. They're just watered that way. The water never gets to the crops in the corners. When I arrived at the Charlotte airport, I went about my project of taping the purple Prince symbols over bathroom signs that read men and women, and then I went to church. The day after I returned home, I sat on the edge of the stage at House for All Sinners and Saints, the Denver church I pastor. My parishioner Megan and I were watching the church's monthly community meal take place. Groups of mismatched people of differing ages and sexual and gender orientations were situated at 12 circular tables throughout the room, eating chili out of styrofoam bowls. Megan, a large trans woman with long, thin hair and a face and figure that she admits do not allow her to, quote, pass, has enough social anxiety to make sitting at a communal table a non-starter. So she usually makes her own place on the edge of the stage. And some Sundays, rather than join the fray, I hang with her and talk comic books. That day, as our legs hung off the stage, I brought up something that had been on my mind lately. "Hey, Megan," I said, "I read my old Christian sex ed book this morning for the first time in maybe 40 years. She laughed, and I went on. "It taught me that God's plan is for everyone to be heterosexual, cisgender Christians who never have sex with anyone until they marry their one true love and make babies." We both laughed. Then I shook my head. "I mean, I do think there are genuinely those kinds of people out there." Megan held up her hand and touched her thumb to the rest of her purple nail-polished fingers. "Sure there are," she said. "And this is how small that circle is. If you were to draw a circle that represents all the people on the planet, and then inside it, draw another small circle to represent the people who live according to, quote, God's plan, then, well, very few people on the planet fit in that circle. Megan doesn't fit in that circle. I don't fit in that circle. Also not included in this circle are divorced people, people in unhappy marriages, people who have had sex before marriage, people who masturbate, asexuals, gay people, bisexuals, people who are not Christian, people who are gender non-binary. If that's, quote, God's plan, then God planned poorly. Maybe you don't fit in that circle either. God planted so many of us in the corners, yet the center pivot irrigation of the church's teachings about sex and sexuality tends to exclude us. Many of us were taught that if you do not fit inside the circle of the church's behavioral codes, God is not pleased with you. So we whittled ourselves down to a shape that could fit those teachings, or we denied those parts of ourselves entirely, the lusty parts, the kinky parts, the gay parts, the unwanted pregnancy parts, the unfulfilled parts. But our sexual and gender expressions are as integral to who we are as our religious upbringings are. To separate these aspects of ourselves To separate life as a sexual being from a life with God is to bifurcate our psyche, like a musical progression that never comes to resolution.